You're an ice cream cone. You're a lollipop. You're a baby chick. You're a pogo stick. You're a magic trick. You're a spinning top. You're special.
Welcome back to another Neighborhood Archive podcast. It's been a few weeks, I guess, since we've recorded one. The last one being with Tim Madigan, which was a great conversation. I felt like great to talk with him. This time I'm back with Eric, and it's always a pleasure to have Eric on here to talk about everything Mr. Rogers. So, Eric, welcome back.
Thanks, Tim.
We've got four or five topics today, and what I threw out a few weeks ago as a possibility on the message board was the possibility of doing like a question and answer style podcast. If there's anything that people were wondering about, anything we might be able to talk about and just offer our thoughts, our opinions, anything, you know, in general, anything at all. We got a few specific questions that I think are a little bit difficult to verify or to look into at this point. A lot of those having to do with, you know, broadcast dates and things along those lines. So I think we're going to hold off on discussing those and you know, maybe sometime in the future, a lot of that information that's being discussed on the message board can be verified a little bit, and possibly added to the website once it is verified. But you know, those are things that, like I said, I think are hard to verify. But we did have a handful of topics that were thrown my way through the message board, through email, that people were curious about, would like us to offer our thoughts and opinions our opinions on. The first, Eric, if you don't mind me just jumping in with one quick one that I can talk about, is I've had a couple of people ask me what I do whenever I post information about an episode, what that process is like. And quite honestly, if I could talk about it just for a quick minute, it's not the most exciting process. I hate to be a spoiler here, but what I do is I just pop the episode in, take a look at it, and as I watch it, just detail it, kind of like writing a book report, you know, where you're just detailing what you see and detailing the facts. If something interesting comes up, I scroll down and add to the notes section as I go. As different characters come on the screen or come on the episode, I add them to the list at the bottom as they appear. So typically those are listed in the order they appear in the episode. And then once it's all said and done, you know, obviously that part takes about, you know, 25 minutes to a half an hour. Then it usually takes about another 30 minutes or so before the information that I've got together is up on the website. So it takes about an hour total to do one episode. The second half hour being creating links to the character pages, to the song pages, creating links back to the episode page from those pages, taking screenshots and adding the screenshots and getting those on there. And then, as I've started doing lately, putting a quick note up on Twitter, on Facebook, and then, of course, adding the link to the blog. So that's the extent of it. I mean, honestly, I hate to be, you know, kind of dull, but that's really all there is to that. So to answer that question, there you go. That's what I go through whenever I post information. And the same holds true, really, for anything, for a record album, for a CD, for a book, character pages. You know, thanks to Paul. Paul put tons of work into that. And we're a good way through the character pages, and that's kind of been put on hold for the time being while I'm going back through some of these older episodes. But yeah, you know, Paul put a heck of a lot of work into that, and then, you know, so that made it go a little bit quicker. But there you have it. There's my long story short version of of what it takes to do a post for the site.
I think you give a good I think the blog posts reflect well, though, that you might not do a lot of research per se, because it's all pretty much contained in an episode, but it doesn't come across as just like as simple as you put it, just watching the episode and writing down what happened. You know, like you said, you have enough of it in your head that you are able to say what happens right here, references what happened in episode, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So I'd be surprised. I'm surprised that it only takes you an hour, because the way I tend to do stuff like that, it becomes a huge out of control monster. And like, oh well, now I got to go look up which episode that was, and I can never find it. And you know,
well, the one thing that's come in handy there is a lot of people may not realize this, but there is a search box on the main page of the neighborhoodarchive.com site. And that, yeah. I use that all the time myself to go back and find information, to where if I know that a certain person was in an episode I've covered already, I can type their name in there and it brings up what episode that is. So that's a very quick way to do that I think a lot of people are unaware is out there.
Yeah, no, that's good. I don't know that I've noticed that.
But yeah, I mean, it's you know, it's not the most exciting process, but it's fun. It's fun to do it, but to describe it, yeah, it's a little dull, I guess. So well, you know, the first question. Well, I guess that's the first question, but the next question that we got to have to do with the show itself. Someone had asked what if we could talk about you know maybe some of our favorite characters, some of our favorite moments from the show. Some characters that we really felt like stand out and that we enjoy others more than others. So Eric, I'll let you go ahead and go first if you don't mind. And just maybe throw out some topics, some characters and some moments from the show that stand out in your mind.
Sure. Let's see, for favorite characters. Well, I everybody would probably say Daniel, I would think. At least in terms of the puppet characters, and I guess that's, you know, that's why they built a new show around him. He really is kind of the most, shouldn't say the most developed necessarily, but he's certainly the most sympathetic of the puppet characters and, the most, I think, serious moments were spent with him, in the make-believe, segments. So he's the obvious first choice. I think for some reason I always liked X too. Mm-hmm. I couldn't tell you what it was. Maybe because he was kind of comic relief a lot of the times. The kind of the country rube that he played. I'm one of the few people I know who didn't have any problem with Lady Elaine.
Yeah.
I think everybody I've talked to always said, oh, you know, she scared me. And I don't think I ever felt that. Or maybe I did find her intimidating, but not to the point that I, you know, was turned off by it.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought the museum go-round was cool, too. So, yeah. that was always a neat building. And that's obviously, you know, I associate that with her. I think I said in a previous episode that I think Corny, I always thought Corny was funny. He was such a minor character in the later years, and I don't remember if he played a bigger role before, but I could go through and I could list every character.
Oh, sure.
It'd be easier to list the characters I don't particularly like.
Who don't you particularly like? If there was one, if you had to name one that really just grates your nerves or whatever the case might be, who's the one that you don't like?
Yeah, I don't like any of the... well, is it Southwood, I guess? James Michael Jones and Betty Templeton and I don't know if it's their voices, if it's their... They're very strange the way they're written. It's almost like they're trying to portray a certain type of person with each of them, and I guess I get Betty. She's real talkative and you know, that sort of... not gossipy woman necessarily, but I still didn't never quite got what they were going for with those two characters, mm-hmm. you know? Let's see. I don't know. Grandpere didn't necessarily do anything for me and neither did the platypuses, but, mm-hmm. Can't say they annoyed me or anything.
Yeah.
Lady Aberlin, of course, counts as a character, so I'll put her on that list. She was, like I think I've said, you know, Fred Rogers and Lady Aberlin were pretty much the stars of the show as far as I was concerned. I think most of my childhood, she was the main human in Make Believe, you know?
Yeah.
I don't really even remember, Neighbor Aber coming in until... Maybe I was in later in grade school, getting up to junior high, but I know he was there. Now I've seen dates and stuff. I know he was there earlier, but he didn't make an impression on me until later. Mm-hmm. And it might have just been the particular episodes I was catching. But and Handyman Negri, too, I find.
Yeah.
You know, I like him a lot.
Yeah.
Although, but anyway, I could list everybody.
Well, sure. Yeah. I mean, everybody has their characteristics that are appealing, I think, and then there's just some that have, I guess, fewer appealing characteristics than others. So
yeah,
But yeah, I'm with you on X the Owl. I've always don't know what it is about X. It's kind of like what you said, where it might be the comic relief, it might be just his personality, but I was always a fan of him as well.
Yeah. I want to say, going through my list here, that, you know, even though Fred Rogers did a majority of the characters, it really is something about his performance that wins me over in each of his characters. Mm-hmm. I mean, even Lady Elaine, you watch the character and the way he speaks. I mean, he's putting on a character that couldn't be more unlike him.
Yeah.
From what I've been told, you know, she's sarcastic just abrasive in mm-hmm. some ways. And she's constantly, you know, trying to rile people up. And it comes out so naturally, and it doesn't sound like he's reading from a script, even though it would be a script he wrote most likely. Mm-hmm. But he's so convincing in that part. And then to say, to hear how often he was, he denied being an actor and denied having really any interest in acting or fame or anything, but he does that really well with these characters, mm-hmm. you know. And maybe it's because he's behind the scenes and he's more comfortable that way. But, I mean, he doesn't end up being somebody who reluctantly was pushed into doing characters and to playing parts, you know. Right. He really, really is good at least these characters.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to go a little more obscure on two of my favorite characters. Of course, there's, you know, like I said, X the Owl was the character from the main Neighborhood of Make Believe and from the main show that I felt like I kind of liked more than others. But I don't know what it is about these two, I guess, more obscure characters. Yo-Yo LaBelle, just for some reason, I'm just fascinated by that character, because that character is just so stinking bizarre that, yeah. You know, what in the world who came up with the idea, okay, he's going to only speak a couple of words, and those words are going to be me and thee. Okay, you know, that who can dream this stuff up? And it's just, to me, it's just fascinating because it's so bizarre.
Yeah.
The puppet itself reminds me of those old, I think like Rocky Balboa puppets that you could buy that you pull the trigger on the inside and it kind of punches.
Right.
You know, the way Yo-Yo LaBelle's arms are remind me so much of those old Rocky puppets. But, yeah, I'd be curious.
That was Rocky? I think I had one that was Ronald Reagan.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah.
I just remember seeing the Rocky ones. I'm sure there were others.
Rocky, and then they began.
I'm sure there were others.
Political versions, but yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm very curious to know where that puppet came from. I don't know. Is that something that somebody found in a shop and they were like, oh, this would be really cool to use on the show? Or was that some sort of a, you know, was that one of those Rocky or Ronald Reagan puppets that was, you know, modified with an alien head? Or I don't know. I'm really fascinated by that character. And then, of course, the Zucchini Brothers, just that whole segment just blows my mind. I think it's hilarious because of the backstory to it. Number one, the fact that it's only used, as far as I know, twice in the run of the show. And it might be, what, maybe 60 seconds long, if that. And mm-hmm. and to know the backstory being that it's just basically people from the crew. It's people from the show's crew that kind of filmed this just screwing around one day as a joke, and they used it on the show, I think is absolutely hilarious, you know. And just to watch it and try to make sense of that 60 seconds, I love it. I absolutely love it.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know that I've even seen the real clip. I think I've seen something shorter from one of the documentaries, maybe. Mm. I don't know if it was the actual. It was in the wedding episode, right? Or one of the.
It was
or
in,
no, King Friday's birthday.
Yeah, because it was a gift from, I believe, from Digger DeGorum, where she had a basket, I think, and when the basket, the top came off, they could look inside and see this performance from the Zucchini Brothers.
Right, through the magic of blue screen.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
So
okay, I do remember that from the blog, but I don't know if I've seen that.
Oh gosh, it's fantastic. It's I don't know. It's just fascinating. That's a good word for it. It's fascinating just to watch and to try to make sense of it, which I think is virtually impossible to do. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember the clip that I did see, whether it was the whole thing or not, and I remember thinking it was funny because, I mean, here it was what, 19, was it even in the 70s yet?
It was mid to late 70s. Mid to late 70s, I believe. In fact, right. Let me look it up here real quick, and I'll go ahead and keep going, Eric. I'll look it up as you're talking.
Yeah, and it's, like you said, all the guys in the crew who are probably the least, the last people you would actually want to put in front of the camera in terms of 70s fashion and style and stuff.
Right.
And here they put them in the acrobat costumes and on a kids show. And I remember thinking that the stunts that they did were, it almost reminded me of like a cheap carnival where you had just paid 50 cents to watch their show and you were totally ripped off because they weren't really doing anything.
That's the key to it right there. That's the part that I think is hilarious, is they're not doing anything at all. You know, one of them will stand up on one leg and throw his hands in the air and the rest of them just kind of go crazy like he's done this spectacular stunt.
Right. If they cheer enough, the audience will be impressed.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, for those of you who have not,
that is pretty funny.
For those of you who haven't seen this episode or are curious, go ahead and if you go to the website and click on characters, they're listed under the Flying Zucchini Brothers. They appeared in, it looks like, episode 1449, and then again in 1450, and that would go back to the mid 70s to 1975. Incidentally, one of the Zucchini Brothers happens to be Michael Keaton, so that's one of the few episodes he actually appeared on when he was working for the show. So. For the sake of time, Eric, let's talk about favorite moments from the show, and let's limit it down to just one moment. And what's your one favorite scene, favorite moment from the show that comes to mind when you think of your all time most influential or funniest or whatever moment from the Neighborhood show?
Okay, I could probably think of others, but the one that always stands out in my head is. When Daniel wonders if he's a mistake, and I don't remember if that was actually a Making Mistakes episode or not, but he brings it up to Lady Aberlin and says, you know, he's not like other tigers, and she sings a song to him. They sing kind of a duet together. Very touching because it's such a kind of a disturbing sadness to hear from such a well-loved character. Mm. You want these characters to be lighthearted and everything. And he's discussing something very serious.
Yeah.
And it's a great interaction between the two of them. And I believe then after Make Believe, Fred Rogers then addresses it also. I could be wrong. It might actually be two episodes I'm putting together. But Fred has a moment where I was struck by how, I mean, he's always talking to the camera, mm-hmm. but he really does stop and looks at the camera and says, you know, no matter how you look, no matter, how different you may be from your friends and that sort of thing, he says, there's nobody in the whole world who's a mistake. Mm-hmm. And it's a very, I mean, he's almost pointing his finger, you know, mm-hmm. with the intensity that he speaks, and it's very touching. I can only imagine how many, you know, I mean, I remember as a kid noticing Sesame Street and Mr. Rogers, how many handicapped kids were on those shows. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't think you could be on television as a kid unless you were handicapped sure. because there were, you know, so many, kids with handicaps on TV. And I don't necessarily know that I had an opinion about it, but I can only imagine his talking to the camera like that would have just gone straight to those, to any kids watching who might have been feeling like Daniel mm-hmm. was, you know, mm-hmm. and absorbed it way more than anything else, you know, that must have just been a really important, or a very convincing message, I thought. Mm-hmm. I know you said only one moment, but the episode where he goes and visits Coco the Gorilla is amazing, too.
Yeah.
And I didn't see that till later. I think, you know, that was one of the later episodes. But I remember being struck when I saw that, how cool that was to have that documented.
Yeah.
But anyway. Well,
to kind of piggyback off of the first episode or the first moment that you mentioned, mine is well, probably one of the more well-known ones as well, is just the time he spends singing and talking with Jeff Erlanger. To me, that just it sends chills up my spine every time I watch it, because, you know, in talking with Tim Madigan, for example, a few weeks ago, one of the things that we talked about was was how, you know, Fred Rogers was quoted quite often as saying how important it was to give your full attention to the moment and the person at hand, to where if you're in a room in a conversation with a person, nothing else around you should matter but that person. You should be giving your full attention and your full just paying full attention to that person and that conversation in that moment. And that's exactly what that clip does to me is you can recognize that 100%. You see Fred Rogers looking eye to eye with Jeff Erlanger, and he is 100% in tune with him at that moment. And you can see that, even though there's cameras on him, even though there's a whole crew, I'm sure, behind those cameras, even though that's eventually going to be broadcast, you know, nationwide, maybe even worldwide for years to come, in that moment, it's the two of them. And to me, that just is phenomenal. That just, like I said, just sends chills down my spine every time I see it.
It sounds silly to analyze it because you think Fred really did that with everybody,
right,
even on the show, you know, and there were other kids who came on who he spoke to. There was the little boy in the wheelchair later who had the dog, and I don't remember getting the same feeling of connection between them. Not that there wasn't, but he talked to people like that all the time. He was very focused and good at giving attention. So it is funny to say, well, in this one you could really tell.
Yeah.
But you really can when you watch it.
Oh, absolutely. You know? And, you know, and this might have been intentional, but I felt like a lot of the times when other people had their moment in the spotlight on the show, you know, Francois Clemens, for example, even Chuck Aber to a certain extent, they were performing. You know what I mean? Like, when they would sing to the camera. Versus a lot of the times when Fred would sing, he was singing to an individual and he was talking to an individual. And don't get me wrong, that may have been intentional with those other performers, and they have every right to be performers because that's, you know, essentially what they are. Essentially, I mean, that is what they are. But just in that one moment, I just felt like, gosh, I mean, to know that you're going to be seen, this particular moment in time is going to be seen by thousands, if not millions, of people in the future. And your attention is clearly on that one person. That just to me is great. Yeah. So,
yeah, I wonder if it has something to do too with Jeff Erlanger and the way he reacted to questions and how natural he comes off. I kind of felt the same thing. The few episodes of Chrissy Thompson that have been on Amazon, there's the one where they're shining or polishing shoes, and you can tell she's really just rambling. She's not reading from a script, you know. She's just speaking from her heart, and that makes it certainly more real. You know, it's not Fred asking her questions and she's answering in a sentence, and questions back and forth. So that is far more impressive to hear when they are really just communicating and not reading a script, you know.
Let's talk about the Christmas episode or the Christmas special. I posted a little bit of information, the details about that about a week ago, and you said you had a few questions, or you thought it would be good that I, you know, maybe if I could offer a few more details. Is there anything in particular that you were curious about?
No, I just find it interesting to hear your personal take on things like that. And I know on the site you don't necessarily give a lot of opinion. But, you know, we had talked about the episode or talked about wanting to see it for so long. And so now that you have,
You know, the best description I can give you, and I was talking to someone else about this, and the best description I can come up with was, and this is, I mean, honestly, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about when I say this. Remember when you were a kid and you go to school and you've got your classroom that you go to every day? You're there, you know, 8 o'clock to 3 o'clock roughly every day for the school year. But then once or twice a year, you've got to go back in the evening, like for maybe a Christmas program or an awards program or something like that, to where you're back in your classroom, but it's the evening time.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
That's essentially what I felt like watching this special, because it was still Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. It was still a lot of the same set, but it was just slightly different from the norm. You know what I mean? To where it was something that was very familiar, but it was just slightly different enough that it was different. You know, I had a chance a couple years ago when the the baseball All-Star game, All-Star weekend, was in St. Louis, I had a chance to go to the home run derby. And that was kind of odd because I was in a stadium full of people that I'd been to, but I'd been to the stadium many times before, but I wasn't there for an actual baseball game. It was just strange to be in that situation, you know, to where it was a familiar place, but it was slightly different. And that's exactly how this was, to where it's a very familiar feel to the special, but it's just slightly different enough that it's not quite the same. But all that said, it really is great. I don't know any details as far as if and when this might become available for other people to see or for purchase or whatever. You know, that's completely out of my hands, and I unfortunately don't know any details. But I certainly hope that at some point it is available, because it's a lot like the, you know, every year I always watch this, the Christmas Eve on Sesame Street. That's something I watched as a kid and loved it. You know, it was an annual event in my house to watch that on PBS when it was aired. And even now into adulthood, I still watch that with my kids every year. And so I kind of get the same feel from that, to where I think this would be a fun one for people to watch around the holidays, of course, you know, who grew up watching the neighborhood program, just because it gives you that Christmas feel, of course, just because it's a Christmas special. But the one thing I will say that I thought was interesting, and I didn't mention this on the website because I thought it was a little minor, but kind of, you know, thinking about it now in hindsight, at the very beginning when Mr. Rogers is walking through the neighborhood, as the credits are rolling at the beginning, he's greeting a lot of the neighbors. And I think I put maybe one picture on there of him, you know, talking to Mr. McFeely, I think. But it seems like it's very, very warm.
Yeah.
You know, for example, like he greets Francois Clemens, who's out at an outside, like an outside cafe, enjoying a nice cold drink. You know, and just he's just sitting there. I'm thinking, okay, that's not exactly how you'd expect a Christmas episode to lead in. But then, you know, after he greets all of these people, then moments later, the three carolers show up at his window, like in stocking caps and in scarves and things like that. So I guess looking back, that is a little curious. But
yeah, well, that's what I was thinking based on the screen caps you said, mm-hmm. is not necessarily the outdoor shots, but in the neighborhood of make-believe, you know, I'm used to... when kid shows do a Christmas episode, you know, the entire set is transformed and there's fake snow over stuff and there's, you know, cooler colors. And I see a garland on the wall of the museum go around, but it's still, you know, it's those dusky hills in the background and the kind of dirty green trees and nothing looks winterish at all, you know.
Yeah, you know, the castle did, I guess I'm looking at the screenshots now, and the castle, I didn't do a good job of showing this, but the castle did have a little bit of, I think there's a tree, a Christmas tree that's set up on the ledge there, and there's, you know, like you said, a little bit of garland and a handful of presents that are set up. But other than that, it's business as usual.
Yeah. Yeah, and then as you get down to the last couple shots, there's Fred sitting in front of the tree and things like that.
Oh, but, right.
So is this, obviously, a live person as an ice skating Lady Elaine, but
it is.
Is it also, she doesn't have a mask on or anything, right?
She does, actually, yeah. Maybe I could get a better shot of that on there, but it's similar to, remember when the live person played Lady Elaine that danced around in front of the museum in that one episode? I believe it's the same type costume.
Okay, see, this looks, it looks like she might have, like, a fake chin or nose on.
But... No, if I remember correctly, you know, I think it's the same get-up there. But yeah, I can try to get a better picture of that on there, looking back at it.
See, that creeps me out way more than the puppet does. The full size Lady Elaine is scary. I will say that.
I will say from the Christmas special, I've been surprised and really really interested in the response I got from a lot of the comments on the blog from people who recognize names in the credits. You know, people saying that not only obviously the one that stands out to me is the lady that played Mrs. Hamilton being the grandmother of Happy Gilmore. But, you know, and she's been in several other things. I think she was on Happy Days, and she's been in a few other, you know, several other things as well. But a lot of people made comments on the blog about, you know, people who are part of the crew and part of the makeup crew and the choreographers and things like that is, you know, very, very well-known people. One person was, I guess, involved in the creation of Jason Voorhees from the Friday the 13th movies. You know, and if you read down through those comments, it really is interesting to see a lot of the big names that were a part of this special. Interestingly enough, I thought it was kind of interesting to see that the choreographer for the ice skating scene is Don Brockett.
Yeah, I noticed
and,
that
and
too.
To me, what is involved with that? Did he just kind of stand on the side and say, okay, do this, do that? Or did he actually, you know, choreograph that entire routine? That's great to think about.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but yeah, that's the Christmas, you know, the Christmas special. I could sit and talk about all of the details of it, but I think I tried to detail it as well as I could on the website, you know, short of going into every last minute detail. But it, you know, again, I really don't have any information on when it might potentially be available, if ever. But I certainly hope at some point it will, you know, it will be out there for people to take a look at, because it was a lot of fun to see it, and I know that's one that a lot of people are very curious to take a look at.
Mm. Yeah, I'd be interested to see if it's as slick as it looks, because it almost looks not like Mr. Rogers in ways, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so many extra cast, so much extra cast, and parts of it, you know, were filmed off the set.
Right.
And well, and specifically with the cast, they so many, like you said, just not big name people, but people who had no association with the show and maybe no interest in the show other than it was a paycheck that week, you know.
Mm.
I'd be interested in this dramatic storyline towards the end of the Lost Sheep or something.
Yeah, yeah.
It all just seems so bizarre.
You know, and I think it all comes together in the end. You know, it's, you know, when the family comes back and, you know, everybody's back together and they all sing together. I mean, they do a good job of tying it together. It's kind of like you would expect from a week of episodes during the 80s and the 90s, where if you just caught one little section of that week, you might think, what in the world is this?
Mm-hmm.
But then
mm-hmm.
in the end, they kind of tie everything all together to make it all relevant to each other. And that's kind of the way this is, to where if you happen to sit down and catch a few minutes of it, you know, the part where the bus of kids breaks down and the music man comes and, you know, teaches them to play the flute with a stick, you know, it's odd. But then if you watch the entire thing, it does come together, and they do a great job in the end. So,
okay.
You know, I'm sorry, go ahead.
So it says at the bottom that Daniel Stripe the Tiger got a toy truck. Do we know if this is the toy truck?
You know, that's
that
a good question.
He kind of has till the end of the series?
That's a good question. I don't know. I never thought of that. So, you know, I'm not sure if it's another to add to his collection or if it's the one that always came out. I'll have to look into that and see what I can come up with.
I don't know that I could even tell you what his toy truck looked like.
I couldn't either, but
they might not have been consistent what they used.
It'd be kind of cool. It's cool to think that's possibly where it started.
Right.
I'd like to know that, you know, why did Corny get a battery powered lamp? It seems like the other things kind of are, you know, explainable. You know, it's Christmas time and Henrietta gets a knitted hat. X, you know, is fascinated and loves Benjamin Franklin. He got a picture there. Daniel likes toy trucks and got a truck. But Corny got a battery powered lamp. I don't quite understand the logic behind that. So it makes me wonder if maybe there's an earlier storyline there, or if that's just something random that they decided that Corny needed.
Right, right.
So, you know, along those lines with the Christmas episode, I will say, you know, I mentioned that I don't know any information on when things might be available, if at all. And quite honestly, unfortunately, that goes along with, you know, goes for any of these episodes, with any of these older things, the ones that I'm documenting now, the ones that other people have asked about. Unfortunately, I do get that question a lot, and unfortunately, I don't have an answer for that as far as if and when anything else will be available. Really, when it comes down to it, that's completely out of my hands. You know, I know there's a lot of people that do wonder if I, you know any information that isn't out there, and I'll tell you straightforward, I don't. What I, you know, I don't know if there's plans for more. I think ideally the folks at the Fred Rogers Company, I think, would like to make things available, but I think there's a lot of behind the scenes holdups, for lack of a better term, that keep them from doing that. You know, I think we have to remember that when it comes down to it, the Fred Rogers Company isn't necessarily there to supply nostalgia for the handful of people that want to see it. When it comes down to it, they're ultimately there to provide services, and you know, they need to stay afloat when it comes down to it. As far as financially, they need to stay afloat, and it just doesn't make sense for them to invest in something that's not going to be financially responsible. And so I don't know if that is one of the holdups, or if it is a matter of You know, like some people have speculated, copyrights or royalty payments that are involved. I think there's so many levels to it that it's hard to grasp for a lot of people, you know, myself included to a certain extent, that really just want to see this footage. And, you know, it's hard to realize that there's more to it than that, that there's so many levels involved. And so all of that to say, you know, I don't think that this is anything, you know, I don't think this is anything that the Fred Rogers Company doesn't want to happen. And, you know, of course, I don't want to speak for them because I don't know this for certain, but I just think at this time, I think there's so many hang-ups that it's not, that are in place that it's not going to happen immediately. Down the line, possibly, but unfortunately, timeline-wise, I have no clue. Yeah. So that's my little soapbox on that topic, I guess.
Yeah, well, and just speculating myself, I know somewhat the way contracts and things like that, you know, have to be written, and if something is not, if a DVD release was not written into a contract in the 1970s, which of course it wouldn't have been, mm-hmm. you know, maybe a home video release of some sort, then that's a big pain and a lot of money and paperwork that has to be done now.
Sure.
And an episode like the Christmas one that has how many guest stars and things like that is going to be way more problematic to release than, you know, an average episode, which maybe had Fred and maybe two extra cast members, not counting all the crew and all that, who all have to be considered when, stories I've heard about royalties and things like that, it's, you know, thank goodness these people do get paid when things get released, but it also all has to be factored in if you want to release something,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, and I don't...
And I think...
No, go ahead.
I think as viewers and fans, too, we overestimate how much of an audience there is for some of these things, you mm-hmm. know? And, yeah, all of us on the message boards and everything would love to see it, but I don't know how many people that would be, maybe 2 or 3 dozen.
Yeah, exactly. And I think there's plenty more of that isn't present, you know, on the website and the message board. But I think you make a great point, and I think you've hit it right on the head, is that this is something that is important to the people in this, I guess, online community. And so, of course, it's something that everyone is talking about and wanting to see. But outside of that community, is there enough of a demand that this would be profitable and responsible on the part of the Fred Rogers Company? You know what I mean?
Yeah, and to us, it seems like a no-brainer. Like, well, they would release this and they would easily make their money back. And, mm-hmm. and we don't necessarily know that. And I remember reading some statistic, probably Wikipedia, and I could probably look it up, but I'll just go from memory. That, you know, at the height of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood popularity, they had a 6% share of the market, or however the term is put in ratings terms, that, you know, when the most people ever were watching it, it was only 6% of America. Mm. And I remember thinking how minuscule that sounded.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how, and I guess, you know, you factor out all the households without kids,
mm-hmm.
and then you factor out all the kids over a certain age, and maybe that is a very small portion of the television viewing public, but it really put into perspective now after so many years when you're really going to be dealing more with adult fans and maybe kids whose parents will introduce them to the show, there's got to be, it's a very, very limited audience. You know,
you factor in the demographic of people in their 20s and 30s wanting to watch it, that's not exactly going to send the demand through the roof, you know?
Right.
I think you've made a great point.
And it's not like the old days of television where you would scroll through your 7 channels and you would, if it was on the air, you'd find it easily. Now it's, mm-hmm. someone has to be thinking, hey, I wonder if Mr. Rogers is on the air or available online,
mm-hmm.
and they have to go search it out,
right.
you know?
Right.
It's much... There's plenty of things to distract you, and you may be the biggest Mr. Rogers fan down in your soul, but if it's not being shoved in front of your face, you won't even think to look for it. You know, people always say that there's so many more choices on TV. And it's not that those choices are better; it's just it's easy to get distracted, and you don't necessarily even remember this show from your childhood. You know,
yeah. Well, speaking of of shows available on television, let's hit our last topic here, and that being the hot topic of Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood, which, as far as I'm aware, is still set to debut this fall, I think in September. So I thought we could just, you know, throw out some opinions there. I know that's kind of a hot topic that's going to get hotter here in the next few months as the show debuts especially. But I think it's hit mixed reviews among, you know, our online community here with the website, in general across the board on other people's blogs and newspapers and media sites and whatnot. It's kind of received mixed reviews. I think generally it's been a positive response, but there's some people with some you know, skepticism and you know, kind of reserved about this. So I'm curious what your thoughts are, Eric, on Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood.
I'm fairly optimistic about it. I don't know that I'll necessarily enjoy it in the way I enjoy Mr. Rogers, because I think obviously it's going to be a different animal.
Mm-hmm.
In the few clips I've watched, you know, I was a little disappointed. Oh, well, that's a new song. Obviously that's a new song. There's hints of the old show in there and there's references, but obviously they're going forward and having to write new material for their audience and not having Fred Rogers at their disposal, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it's probably the best that you could ever expect, because people have broached other ideas, and they should have used Chuck Aber. They should have continued, and I can't think of a more disturbing idea than continuing the actual Mr. Rogers Neighborhood without Mr. Rogers.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I don't think. I mean, we'll talk so often about how unique and how he made the show, and to say that, then you can't also say, well, it can go on without him.
Right.
You know, I think the best possibility is to take the material and the lessons and figure out a way to package it for today's audience. Mm-hmm. And I'm not a huge fan of the type of animation that they're doing it with, but mm-hmm. but it's certainly better. I like it better than maybe a fully rendered computer animation, like if you watch Mickey Mouse Clubhouse or... what is the reading one, Super Y, I think. I find those more unappealing looking. This has a look of something traditional, even though it's done with computer, you know. It looks like little cutouts and there's photographs incorporated into the graphics and things. And that's interesting in a way. It's got a tactile quality I like.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like seeing how the neighborhood's expanded. That's kind of neat, how it's developed. I've still got so many questions about, okay, well, now, are the original, I mean, is King Friday there somewhere, or is Lady Elaine there somewhere?
Yeah,
these are very clearly kid characters,
yeah.
So are there parents around, or?
See, that's the thing, is I you know, people have formed opinions, it seems like, with very little information. And that's
right.
The part that gets me is a lot of the opinions are out there, and don't get me wrong, for anybody who happens to be listening to this who has expressed their opinion through the message board or through the blog or to me personally through an email or whatever, you know, among themselves. Don't get me wrong. Everyone is entitled to their opinion, positive or negative. I have no problem with that. But I think it's difficult to form an opinion based on so little information.
Sure.
You know, when all we have is maybe a few short clips of the show that are out there, there's a handful of pictures, a handful of articles, and that's it. So it's hard to form an opinion on the actual show itself, having seen and knowing very, very little about it.
Sure. Yeah. This sort of cult following that you, you're unwittingly helping create for the original Mr. Rogers Neighborhood is, it's almost a curse as much as a blessing for the show, you know, because it really does it. I mean, the original Mr. Rogers never could have survived. The original program never could have survived under the kind of scrutiny that it gets nowadays.
Oh, absolutely not. No,
I mean, and I'll count myself as, you know, one of just the rabid fans who has an opinion on every second that goes on the air. And, you know, 10 years after it's ceased production, it's harmless to do. I mean, it has nothing. I have nothing but warm memories for the original stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Even later episodes that aren't my favorite. I mean, you don't feel any need to criticize it too harshly because you know it doesn't do any good. It's not gonna go into production next week and your opinion won't matter. Mm-hmm. But I think with something like this that technically is still kind of being developed, there's a urge to give your opinion as if it's going to affect the outcome in some way, mm-hmm. you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that the thing that people haven't, or people that get hung up on the, I guess the negative here is what they're looking for, and, you know, and somewhat to a certain extent myself here too, when the show that you have invested so much into, that you've enjoyed so much as a child, growing up, even as an adult, you know, when it ends, and then you hear word, you know, 10 years later that this new show is going to be coming out based on these characters, you kind of had this expectation or this hope that it's going to be, give you that same feeling and same familiarity of the original program. And mm-hmm. the thing to keep in mind is I don't think that's the intent. In fact, I know that's not the intent. You know, this right. isn't supposed to be Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. You know, things are remade all the time and spinoffs are created. And that's the idea of a spinoff to me is it's not supposed to be the original. It's supposed to be something based on the original. And, you know, you can look at that with spinoffs of television shows. You know, look at the new Electric Company, for example. You know, now granted, this isn't necessarily a spinoff as much as it's a recreation. And I think they've done a good job of just modernizing the original Electric Company. So, you know, there's some differences there, of course. And that's fine because they fine-tuned it for a modern audience. You know, if they did exactly what was done on the 70s version of the Electric Company, I don't think that would meet the standard or meet the desire of today's kids and today's generation, which have a whole different set of expectations than what we had when we were growing up watching, you know, the Electric Company and Sesame Street, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, shows like that. And so, you know, to think that this is going to be a recreation and it's going to pick up exactly where it left off, I think that's missing the point entirely. And I think it's wishful thinking. But I don't think that's even a realistic possibility, considering just the simple fact that you know the music isn't going to be there. Fred Rogers he wrote all of that music, and obviously he's not around to write the music for this one. So the music is going to be different. There's different people that are creating this. So I think what the effort is here is exactly on point. You know, it's taking the message of Fred Rogers. It's taking those values and those lessons that he wanted to teach through his show. And it's presenting it in a modern format. It's presenting it to today's kids in a way that today's kids want to see it. And so to be offended by the fact that the music doesn't sound right or that the characters aren't quite the same, I don't think they should be the same because this isn't the same show.
Yeah, and you know, being a rabid fan of other things too, let me ask this and mm-hmm. see if you might feel the same way.
Sure.
This is like, it reminds me of, a couple years ago when they put out the new Star Trek movie. Mm-hmm. I'm a big Star Trek fan.
Okay.
More of like the 80s and 90s stuff because mm-hmm. I was too young to see the originals mm-hmm. when they were first being aired. But I didn't like the idea of this new movie that was supposedly a reboot and they were going to take all the history and it wasn't necessarily going to be relevant anymore, you know? Mm-hmm. And I really didn't like the idea of, now, wait a second, what's wrong with... I didn't like the feeling that it was almost like the director or the producers were saying, you know, Star Trek's really campy and we don't like it, but we're going to take it and use it as our own thing, and it's going to be much better than what you all grew up with, you know, and liked.
Right.
And I had this fear in my head that somehow... It sounds even silly to say it, but somehow in, you know... in the world, Star Trek was being overwritten and when people talked about it, they would talk about the new stuff and somehow I was the only one who's going to remember how great the old stuff was. And that's the kind of fear I get from reading people's comments about Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood is that somehow this is going to replace Mr. Rogers, you know, mm-hmm. and maybe I don't feel that way in this case because I went through it with Star Trek. I got over it. You know, I liked the new movie and it was just one more thing of how many episodes, you know, I mean, how many movies are there and how many episodes? It's just one more. It doesn't mm-hmm. replace anything.
Mm-hmm.
so maybe I'm a little more grounded with the Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood thing, but I do get that sense from people that they feel like, oh no, now I'm going to go out, and if I want to talk about Mr. Rogers, people are going to think, oh, you're talking about Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood, and I'll have to explain to them how great this show was, and it's being erased from people's memories and things, you know?
The thing that... Go ahead.
And nowadays, I think that's even less of a concern, because things live on so much longer with the internet and with DVDs and things. In the old days, maybe something did get forgotten, you know? They'd make a movie in black and white, and then they'd remake it in color, and the black and white version got forgotten, you know? And I don't think that's so much the case anymore. And if it's good enough to really be as well remembered that it gains a cult following of its own, well, then that means it's a really good program, you know? A lot of kids' shows come and go and aren't really remembered for very long, you know.
Well, it's a separate animal entirely, because in the clips that I've seen and the things I've read, I've never once seen, other than, you know, in people writing articles about it, in the clips themselves, there's no mention of Mr. Rogers that I've seen yet. I'm curious to see if his name is ever mentioned in the show. But so far, it's not like it says, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood presents, you know, Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood, or Fred Rogers presents... This is Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood. There's no mention yet, or anything I've seen, that Mr. Rogers is even a part of this show. Other than, obviously these being his characters and his message and so on. But, you know, to separate the two, I think that there is a separation here. This is a totally different show that's not supposed to necessarily be a continuation, you know, or a reboot, more so than it's just supposed to be, let's carry on the message with some characters that, you know, that were created by Fred, and let's throw in some nods here and there for the adults that are watching, that will say, hey, there's some, you know, there's a traffic light, or hey, there's the trolley. But for the most part, this is a brand new show for a brand new generation of kids to watch and enjoy, and hopefully get the same lessons and learn the same values from on their terms that we learned, you know, on our terms with Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood back in the, you know, in our time. And that's the one thing that I've mentioned multiple times through our message board, through the blog, and just I try to remind people that we as adults, we have this special place in our heart for Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, but we are not the target audience here. You know, this is something that we as adults still enjoy and still find pleasure in watching and going back and remembering. But Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood is not for us. You know, Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood is for the kids, and for the kids to respond to. And the fact that my kids fall right in that target audience, and when my kids sat down and watched these clips that are online, they were blown away. They loved it. They loved it. You know, and so I'm not saying that's going to be the case with every kid across America, that every kid is going to love it. But if the response that those few clips got from my kids, which are in the, you know, who are in the heart of the target audience, gosh, I mean, this is, they've hit the nail right on the head as far as I'm concerned. And I personally can't wait to see it, because I don't want it to be a recreation of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. And I think that by carrying on his legacy and carrying on his message in this way, the last thing it is insulting to anybody. I think this is a fantastic next step for a modern audience. And again, I know some people disagree with that, and that's fine. That's fine. You know, I don't expect everyone to have that same opinion, but I would hope that people would give it a chance and don't form opinions just based on what little information is out there.
Yeah. And the other thing, and I don't want to sound like we have to look at it from a consolation point of view, but the other thing is, well, if Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood wasn't going on the air, then what do kids today have? You know, they could have the little bit of Mr. Rogers that's going to be in this, and it might be a lot, but they can have this new hybrid, or what are the chances they're really going to see one of the reruns, you know? Yeah, unless curious. They're fortunate enough to be in one of the areas where they are still being shown, and that's great.
Yeah.
But it's not like Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood is still being shown everywhere, and this is replacing it. It's not on the air for the most part, so this might be better than nothing. And then it might surprise those people too.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, yeah. I'm curious. Well, you know, we'll see what the fall brings. I'm, you know, once the show has actually broadcast a few episodes, I'm very curious you know, not only to hear opinions from people within the, you know, this online community, but, you know, just nationwide. I'm very curious to hear responses from, you know, the professional critics and the people that's their job is to kind of decide whether or not this is valuable or not valuable, but if this is legit or not.
How much merchandise are we going to get from this?
You know, that's something else I'm curious too. Is this going to be marketed along the same terms as, you know, things like Super Y and the Cat in the Hat and the, you know, all these other PBS show, you know, PBS kids shows, or is this going to be marketed on a you know, a lower level or a more modest level like the original program was? And you know what? I'm fine with it either way. You know, people can say, oh, it's commercializing the message too much and so on and so forth. But again, it's taking an age-old and timeless message and it's presenting it to a modern audience through modern terms. You know, it's sometimes the merchandising pays off, and that's what's necessary to get the name out there and get the word out there about a program and to keep it going and to promote it and popularize it. So we'll see. I'm real curious.
Tim, I want a museum go around playset. That's all there is to it.
I'm telling you, I could do an entire podcast for hours upon hours about my theories on that original neighborhood of make believe playset. I want to know where that is. Is it out there? It's got to be, because that, and this is a total, you've got me off on my little soapbox on that now. It's out there. I know it's out there because that picture on the box is a real playset. So there was one made, even if it's only one. It's out there.
Yes, some toy executive took it home to his kid as a failed attempt.
Oh, gosh. Oh, that eats away at me every time I think about it because it's out there. I know it is. So
that's funny.
Yeah. You know, let's wrap up. We're pushing an hour here, and I don't want people to, if they've made it this far, I don't want to take up too much more time, and we're right at an hour. I think we've had a great discussion today. You know, I would love to do this more often if people are interested in maybe throwing some questions our way. I'd love to have Eric back on, and we can talk about some thoughts, some opinions about different things to do with the neighborhood, especially, you know, once the new program debuts this fall. I think that'd be a great topic to get on and kind of dissect a little bit and give our thoughts on once we have a little more information. So, Eric, as always, thanks for taking the time to join me and to talk about this stuff.
Yeah, no, this is a favorite part of my week so far. So,
it's
thanks.
Friday. Yeah. It's Friday right now, so you must have had a long week if this is your favorite part of the week so far.
Unless something happens tomorrow, you've got top billing. So
yeah, and for everybody else, of course, you know, continue to keep tabs on the Neighborhood Archive site, the blog. The podcast I'm hoping we can do a little more often through the summer months while I've got a little more spare time. And, of course, the message board. Feel free to continue the great discussions that are taking place there. Take care, everybody.